people who have been living in that village called Zanuta, the fleet for their life from Yunon and the settlers with him in that illegal outpost.
Now,
That's why...
Basil, he has been released, but the body of Ulda has not been, which means you can't have a funeral. Can you talk about the significance of this? Where is the Israeli military keeping his body?
We don't know where they keep his body. For sure, in somewhere in some hospital. They're refusing to release his body unless the family would bury him outside of his village, just with the participation of 15 people, and he would be buried during the night, which the family rejected at all. They're saying Auda was not a criminal. He was an activist. He was killed in a crime. And he deserved a funeral where all of us, all of his friends, all of his family would attend and would be grief in a grave that's in his village and close to the family, as they are asking. So his wife, mother, and other 60 women from his community are now, since Thursday, in a hunger strike, protesting the Israeli authorities holding Auda's body. And not just that, yesterday, as I said, Yunon have been able to come back to the village next to Auda's brother's house to dig again for the expansion of the illegal settlements. They brought him there in a provocate and to provocate the families. I mean, he just killed their son 1 week ago, and now we're able to come and work again with a bulldozer next to their houses while the body of their Auda, their son, is not released.
And Basil, could you talk about the general situation in the West Bank as Israel continues its genocidal war in Gaza? The situation with the increasing settler attacks on the West Bank, in the occupied West Bank, where do you see this going?
Well, the story of Auda is not isolated. As you know, nine Palestinians have been killed since the beginning of the year with the in settlers' attacks, killed by Israeli settlers. This is not random attacks happening here and there. There are daily attacks and harassments and expansion of illegal settlements and outposts on our land and attacking Palestinian communities. This is a policy. This is a state policy, like Israel, other policies of destroying our homes, our infrastructure, like this, the policy of like closing the West Bank, closing cities and towns. So everything is escalating here under the shadow of the genocide that's happening in Gaza. Israel is using the policy of settlers' violence, as I said, the policy of expansion of the Israeli settlements, the destruction of our own communities, like the village of Khalt Dabi and Mayit, have been totally destroyed by Israeli bulldozers. And they continue with this to annex our land, basically. They want as much as they can of our land, and they want to ethnic cleansing us as much as they can.
Basil Adjar, I want to thank you for being with us, co-director of the Oscar-winning documentary No Other Land, dear friend of Oda Hadalin, whose body is being kept by the Israeli military, and Ty Kavanaugh, former U.S. Navy medic, international volunteer working with Palestinian public health groups in the occupied West Bank. I'm going to turn right now to here in New York. There have been mass protests about what's going on in Gaza and the West Bank, as Prime Minister Netanyahu says he's going to occupy the entire Gaza Strip, escalate the war there. In Sydney, Australia, hundreds of thousands of people marched on Friday. Hundreds took over the office lobby of New York Senators Gillibrand and Schumer, who voted against Senator Bernie Sanders' move to stop arming Israel. Last night at Columbus Circle, outside Trump International Hotel, hundreds also protested in a protest led by the Jewish American group, If Not Now, and other Jewish leaders.
I'm
I'm Amy Goodman from Democracy Now!, standing in front of Trump International Hotel at Columbus Circle, right on Central Park. Scores of people have been arrested, including rabbis. Here in front of the hotel, people are holding banners that say, "Stop ethnic cleansing, Jews say no more." They're holding banners. There are many signs on the ground: "Stop starvation, stop ethnic cleansing, never again is now."
I'm Mortaz Azaiz, a genocide survivor from Gaza Strip. Today I'm 26 years old, and I'm witnessing Jewish brothers are protesting against the genocide, against the Israeli occupation, to end the genocide in my home in Gaza, to free Palestine from the occupation. It means a lot to me. Around 16 months, after 16 months, people still protesting, people still calling for a free Palestine to stop the genocide. It means a lot. It means a lot to me as a Palestinian from Gaza. I lost my family, lost my friends. And these people are loyal, loyal to us, loyal to our souls.
Gaza know what's happening here? These kinds of arrests in front of Trump Tower?
They know, they watch this on Twitter. Today I'm going to share it with the people of Gaza. But unfortunately, if you are starving, your kids are hungry, they didn't go to school for 2 years, it's not going to make you happy, you know? We need something on the ground in Gaza. And this hopefully will lead to something to happen in Gaza.
My name is Rabbi Ari Lev Fornari, and I'm a rabbi for ceasefire who believes that they should end the starvation in Gaza. It's worth taking every risk we can to save every life possible. There are 2 million people in Gaza starving every single day. We just read on Tisha B'Av that if there is a hungry child, you need to feed them bread.
Why in front of Trump Tower?
Trump is responsible for funding and fueling this horrible genocide in Gaza and enabling Netanyahu and his genocidal practices. The only way that Palestinians and Israelis can be safe, including the hostages who are held in Gaza, is if the people of Palestine are free. We just saw that Evyatar David, one of the remaining living Israeli hostages, is starving. He's starving because everyone in Gaza is starving. Food aid to Gaza will save the remaining hostages, and it will save the children and the people of Gaza who deserve to live. We're here to say, let Gaza live. To risk everything, to say never again, let Gaza live.
Every day, like with the phone, I have two phones. The two phones don't stop from messaging. People are starving, people need food, people need money. They don't have cash, they have nothing. They can't leave, and they don't want them to stay. They can't use the sea, they can't swim even. So it's terrifying what is happening there, and what's still happening. And today, Netanyahu issued a decision that he's going to occupy all of Gaza Strip. I'm worried about my grandma, the rest of my family, my house, my friends.
That was Mortaz Azaiza, the world-renowned Gazan photographer who just recently left Gaza, as so many of his family and friends have been killed. And the Philadelphia rabbi, Ari Lev Fortari. That does it for that segment. Special thanks to Jay Corgan, Ellie Kahn, and Kevin Rabinovich. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez as we turn to Amazon labor union leader Chris Smalls, who was released from an Israeli prison and returned to the U.S. last week after at least 5 days in Israeli custody. He was one of 21 activists with the Freedom Flotilla Coalition who attempted to break Israel's blockade on Gaza by sailing a civilian aid ship named the Handala with baby formula, diapers, food, medicine on board. The second time in less than 2 months, Israeli forces raided a civilian humanitarian aid ship bound for Gaza as Palestinians face starvation in what UN experts have called a, quote, worst case scenario of famine, unquote. Chris Smalls' detention spurred international outrage as he described being beaten by Israeli soldiers. He says they choked and kicked him, leaving visible marks on his neck and back. He's the only Black activist aboard the Handala. He's joining us now from New Jersey. We welcome you, Chris, back to the United States and on to Democracy Now! Can you explain what happened, your eyewitness account of when the Israeli special forces came on board your ship, and then what happened to you?
Yes, thank you for having me. And what happened was before they board the ship, you know, they cut communications first. That's the first thing they do. You know, we were able to live stream up until the point of interception. And what they do is they don't want the world to see. So they definitely come during the sunset, after the sunset. They come in the middle of the night, just like they did with the Madeleine. They cut communications first. And then they board the ship. They announce themselves. And then they want to pretty much commandeer the ship, make sure they have full control. So they ordered all of us to stay on deck with our hands up. We weren't able to move. And as they take over the ship, they pretty much kidnap us and take us against our will to the port of Ashdod in Israel, where that wasn't our intention. Our intention was to go to Gaza and deliver humanitarian aid. So for about 12 hours, we had to sail with the IOF to make sure that we transferred to the port authorities and the immigration department.
And Chris, you're known largely for your pioneering work as a labor organizer in winning unionization drive at an Amazon plant. What made you decide to participate in the Freedom Flotilla?
Well, first of all, U.S. labor unions in America have been very complicit, if not participating in this genocide. For the last 21 months, U.S. labor unions have been shipping arms to Israel every 15 hours. I've publicly called them out. The longshoremen has blood on their hands, and the AFL-CIO has blood on their hands as well. They have passed zero resolutions since October 7, and 500,000 Palestinians are dead because of this. And as a U.S. labor leader and a U.S. taxpaying citizen, the Palestinian movement and liberation and resistance always included trade unions since the first Nakba. So from my journeys around the world and meeting with different trade unions, especially in the Middle East, I met plenty of Palestinian trade union presidents throughout the journey. And I understand that this is not outside the scope of labor. This is a working class issue. And as a labor leader, it is our responsibility to be the shield of the working class. An injury to one is an injury to all, and that doesn't exclude Palestinians.
Chris, we only have a minute. What happened to you in Israeli custody? And do you feel you were singled out?
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It had everything to do with racism and bigotry. I can tell you right now from my own experience that Palestinians and people of color are not safe amongst the Israeli government. They single-handedly attack me out of the 21 volunteers because of the color of my skin. I didn't want to consent to their propaganda, so seven authorities threw me to the ground. They put their knees in my back. They twisted my arms behind my back. They levitated me with three on each side, and one of them were pulling my hair back and choking me by the chains, telling me to shut up repeatedly. And they said some very racist remarks. They kept me isolated from the rest of the crew the entire time. And I know, once again, it was discrimination, and I wasn't treated like any of the other passengers.
Did you get food, water? Also, we had wanted to have you in studio, but you said you couldn't because you contracted scabies.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sorry I couldn't be there in person, but we were on a hunger strike, so we absolutely did not eat any food. We remained in hunger strike from the moment of captivity up until our release. So we were on 24-hour lockdown. We were punished because we were on a hunger strike. We wasn't playing into the propaganda of what they tried to do with the Madeleine, with Greta, with the sandwiches and water. We refused everything that was given to us. The prison conditions were horrible, and because of that, yes, I contracted scabies. And, you know, a number of us had to suffer some, had to get medical treatment after being released, because I wasn't the only one or only thing that happened while we were in these inhumane conditions.
Chris Smalls, want to thank you for being with us. Founder of Amazon's first U.S. labor union, participated in the Gaza aid ship named the Handala, which was carrying baby formula, diapers, food and medicine to try to break the Israeli siege on Gaza. When we come back, showdown in Texas. More than 50 Democratic state lawmakers have fled Texas in order to block a vote on a newly drawn Texas map that could add 5 Republican congressional seats. Stay with us.
Stand behind his drunken amp. Stand behind his light of love. Hear him yowl his bloody tongue. Hear him yellow blood and war. Do you believe in his sweet sensation? Do you believe in second chance? Do you believe in rapture, babe?
Do you believe in rapture by Thurston Moore, performing at Smith College in 2005? This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We go now to the redistricting showdown underway in Texas following a push by President Trump for new voter maps that favor Republicans. More than 50 Democratic Texas legislators have left the state to block a vote on a newly drawn Texas congressional map introduced last week that would add as many as 5 Republican seats, including 4 that are in majority Hispanic districts. Republicans could try to force another vote today in a special session, which was supposed to address flood relief and disaster recovery. This comes as the Texas House voted Monday to track down and arrest the Democrats who fled. Democratic Congressmember Greg Kassar joined protesters in a march Monday outside the Texas governor's mansion.
Governor Greg Abbott is a coward for saying that our law enforcement should go out and arrest our local elected officials. This is America. This is a place where you're not supposed to be sending law enforcement to go handcuff elected officials that you disagree with.
Meanwhile, here in New York, Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul met with 6 of the Texas House Democrats and announced she's working with New York lawmakers to find ways to redraw New York's own congressional maps in response. For more, we're joined in Chicago by Cassandra Garcia Hernandez, Democratic Texas State Representative for House District 115, which includes parts of Dallas and North Texas. She met Monday here in New York with Governor Hochul after she fled to block the passage of this new Texas congressional map, then joined her other colleagues who went to Illinois and say they plan to stay out of Texas for the remaining 2 weeks of the special session. Welcome to Democracy Now!, State Representative Cassandra Garcia Hernandez. Can you talk about why you left the state, the fact that they've now passed civil warrants for your arrest, which they can only administer if you're back in Texas?
Yes, good morning, and thank you so much for having me on here today. So they did issue those warrants yesterday, but I do want to make sure that we call out and point out the fact that yesterday the only vote that was on the floor was a redistricting map, and that comes on the one-month anniversary of the floods that happened, in which we lost many people in the floods, and they're still reeling and needing financial help and assistance. So the fact that that happened to be the first vote that came to the floor, I think, speaks multitudes of what Republican leadership is prioritizing in the state of Texas.
And what about this call to have those of you who fled the state arrested? What's your reaction to that?
You know, we were all advised as far as what the particular sanctions were for us leaving the state. We're well aware of the fines, as well as they can also reduce our operating budget. And that impacts how we pay for our staff and run our offices, as well as issuing the warrants as well. They've issued it in the past for past quorum breaks, but it was something that all of us were willing to sacrifice for the fact that this is an incredibly important moment that none of us could miss. And so we wanted to make sure that we met this moment and got out of there when we needed to do what we need to, because as of, as everybody knows, quorum breaking is a legal tool that us as legislators in Texas have available to ourselves.
Now, even before this Republican move, the Texas maps had already been gerrymandered to quite an extent by Republicans. Could you talk about that? And also the claim of the Republican leadership that they did this, these new maps, with no attention to race. Yet, according to Politico, about four of the districts that they are seeking to create would be majority Latino districts, but leaning toward the GOP. Talk about that as well, this Republican strategy of betting on the Latino community becoming increasingly conservative.
Sure. First and foremost, to answer that first question that you had, so there is current pending litigation on the 2011 maps. Or the most recent maps that were drawn, the 2021. And so those have been pending in litigation in El Paso for quite some time. The arguments that they made for those particular maps is that those were not drawn based off race. The letter that Governor Abbott received from Trump, from Trump's administration, essentially said that because of these particular four districts that were listed in that letter were essentially community, race districts, that they needed to be redrawn. And you did mention as far as them being majority Latino districts. But these are some of these in particular, three of these seats are seats held by black members. Three of the districts from the letter are from the Houston area, and one of them was from the Dallas area, 33. But now that we've actually seen the maps, we see that multiple districts are actually impacted, that are more, it's a more broad list of districts that are impacted than the letter that Donald Trump had sent to Governor Abbott. As far as the districts themselves, I've had the opportunity. I lived in the Houston area, so I'm familiar with the Congress people who are being impacted in there, as well as the two districts being impacted in the Dallas area actually overlap with my House district. As a matter of fact, one of them, 32, is my congressional district, my congresswoman, who I even myself was drawn out of her district. And so, as far as all of those districts, all of these districts essentially are minority majority districts. Clearly, these are areas that have been targeted, and those voices that are within those districts are being silenced. And so that's why so many of us have left the state, is because we want to make sure that all of our voices, Texas is an incredibly diverse state. We need to make sure that every community has the opportunity to be heard, that they are not silenced. And we know that this is not just a Texas issue. Texas is essentially just going to be the guinea pig. Once Trump is able to get what he needs out of Texas, he's essentially just going to do it in other states, and we cannot allow that. So that's why we're using this very important tool right now, is because we're also taking the opportunity to get out to other folks and educate people about what's happening in Texas, what's happening on a national level, but more importantly, what we need to do in working with each other, other states, to essentially combat fire with fire. If Texas is ultimately able to pass and give Donald Trump what he wants, we need to make sure that he does not grip that power and essentially take the power away from the people.
I know you were referring to Democratic Congressmember Jasmine Crockett, also of the Dallas area, like you, who revealed she would no longer live in her own district. We're going to play a clip.
I currently don't live in the CD30 that they created. I don't. That's not where I live. Now, they asked us where we live because they are supposed to take that into consideration. And these are some of the things that the court will look at when they're trying to determine whether or not there were problems with creating the maps as incumbents and where they live. And they moved me out of my district. Yeah, they completely changed the makeup of Texas 30. It's really awful. So we'll have to have some conversations about what that looks like.
So that's Democratic Congressmember Jasmine Crockett. She has been redistricted out of her district. She doesn't live in the new district that she would represent. If you could go on, State Representative Cassandra Garcia-Hernandez, to talk about Republicans betting big on Latino voters, building on recent gains with the Latino community.
Sure. I'm absolutely happy to answer that question. As far as our community in Texas, we essentially make up the majority. We're the biggest demographic in the state of Texas, the Latino community is. And but we also have a substantial amount of the Latino community that doesn't vote. And the ones that do vote, very often a lot of the issues that they are hyper-focused are things like the meat and potato, the pocketbook type issues. Because of this last election, we saw some concerning trends amongst the Latino community as far as, you know, who they were voting for and how they voted from the top of the ticket all the way down to the bottom ticket. But I will tell you this, the concept and the idea and the message that the Latino community is overwhelmingly supporting and getting behind Republicans is not true. What is important is that people recognize the Latino community as a whole cannot be considered as one voting group. There are different cultural differences depending on what particular different country you come from. It also can vary based off age and whether you're a first, second, or third generation. There are so many different factors that play into an individual as a Latino deciding where they're swayed as far as politics. And so obviously it's a very important for just, you know, for politics in general, for political parties to invest in the Latino community. But I will tell you, the Latino community is just like any other community. They're feeling the effects of Donald Trump's policies right now. They're not able to make ends meet right now. I believe that ultimately a lot of these policies and a lot of what Republicans are relying on and thinking that the Latino community is going to overwhelmingly show up for them this next time around, I think that they're seriously not really considering the factors and the policies that are impacting in particular my community right now, but quite frankly, working Texas families all over our state.
And Representative Garcia, on Monday morning, you met with New York Governor Kathy Hochul. She says her state may try to add Democratic House seats, even though legally the state is supposed to do have a nonpartisan redistricting. What are you urging the blue states such as New York, Illinois, and California to do if Texas moves forward with this this unprecedented redistricting?
Sure. Just to be frank, all of us who are part of the House Democratic Caucus in Texas, the trips that we are currently having right now with elected officials all over the United States, we're not necessarily telling them to do anything. We're just advising them of what's going on in Texas and having discussions with them about what we are seeing in our state, the sham process of the redistricting committee that turned out the maps, what we have seen from our Republican leadership and how they are bowing down to Donald Trump, and just giving them a history of what's going on in Texas, because this is very unprecedented to see the redistricting happening as it is right now. It should not be happening right now. And so that just goes to show and confirms why the quorum break, in fact, happened, because we are in unprecedented times.
We just had 5 seconds.
The last decision that we needed to make in order to make sure that we protect our democracy.
We only have 5 seconds. Are you planning not to go back to Texas for 2 weeks the rest of the term?
We are taking it day by day, hour by hour. We're just going to make sure that whatever we do it united, and we prioritize not only Texans and our districts and our constituents, but also the American people.
We have to leave it there. Democratic Texas State Representative Cassandra Garcia speaking to us from Chicago. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Mac DeMarco, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby, the Chablis.
Some politicians love to tell us that we have to choose between policies that support people or policies that grow the economy. But we don't have to choose. A strong economy isn't only about stock markets and GDP. It's about all of us being able to afford our rent, our groceries, our medication. When we all thrive, the economy thrives too. Together, we can demand better. Take action at demandbettertoday.ca.